messages for next week. And this part of the book, good, y'all all awake? I think my eardrums just popped, but all right. I'm awake. This part of the book is a little bit different than what we have been looking at so far. I call this kind of the appendix section of Judges, where we have really the story of two Levites, one story in chapter 17 and 18, then another story 19 through 21. We'll be looking at these, and really the key phrase to me in these two stories is everyone did what was right in his own eyes. You see that in chapter 17, verse 6 with this story. And we kind of see the spiral, the downward spiral of the judges. And this is these two stories just kind of emphasize just how bad, morally bad, the Israelites have become, and in some ways you could argue they are even worse than the Canaanites. So we kind of see that, and we see the influence of the Canaanites, and again, what we normally say with the judges is we learn really well what not to do with these two stories. So a lot to learn and a lot to look at, and I think, again, very applicable stories that we can that can help us in our life and our walk with the Lord. We are introduced to a man named Micah from the country of Ephraim, and we're going to see very quickly, kind of there in the first six verses, that Micah is not a person that you want to model your life after. What stands out to you about Micah in verses 2 and 3? He said to his mother, the 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing, behold, the silver is with me. I took it. And his mother said, blessed be my son by the Lord. He then returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother, and his mother said, I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a graven image and a molten image. Now, therefore, I will return them to you. All right, so what stands out to you about Micah? What do you see in Micah just in those two verses? A thief? Good. What else? Yes. What do you think his motivation is for doing that? If we could be kind of a pessimistic towards Micah, why would he give the money back?
I don't know. Maybe he was a special thief to steal from his mother.
Yeah, it doesn't fare well for you if you're stealing from your own mom. And what did the mom say that kind of maybe scared him? Correct. Yeah. So what stood out to me is cursed, right, is the person who took this money. And when Micah heard that, like, oh, I don't want to be cursed. So I'll fess up and say I'm the one that took the 1,100 pieces of silver. And that number should ring a bell, right? Where have we seen that 1,100 number before in Judges? You remember? In connection with Samson. Yeah, each of the rulers of the Philistines promised Delilah, I'll give you 1,100 if you can figure out how in the world Samson's so strong, which she took that offer and was able to succeed in that. You see his, and we'll see this throughout the story, his greed gets the best of him. So that's something to kind of look out for as we continue these two chapters. So what do you think about the mom Once she finds out what her son did, what does she try to do? That's kind of the opposite of cursed be the one who does this. Once she finds out it's her own son. Yeah, try to turn that curse into a blessing. Don't think she had expected that her own son would be the one that took the money from her. So that's exactly what she tries to do. And then she says, I'm going to dedicate all of this money. I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord so that he can make these graven images. And the interesting thing about that is now she is double cursing her son, right? Curse because he just stole the money. Maybe you could say curse because he's not honoring father and mother. So he's kind of going through the Ten Commandments here. But also, Deuteronomy 27, verse 15, cursed is the man who makes an idol or a molten image. Maybe double cursed is the man who does both, right? Kind of looking at that. And an abomination to the Lord, the work of the hand of the craftsman, and sets it up in secret. And all the people answer and say amen. So she thinks that, well, I'm going to dedicate to the Lord, and this way we can make some gods out of this. And how much money does she dedicate to making these two images? Interesting, right? She just said, I wholly dedicate. Well, when I say wholly, I mean, that's two out of, 11 is pretty good. So I'll keep the 900 to myself is my assumption on that. I don't really want to give it all to the Lord. Micah sets up a shrine, the place, the God that he can worship, makes an ephod, consecrates one of his sons to become a priest. What do you think about that? What's wrong with that picture? What's not wrong with that picture, right? Assuming that Micah is an Ephraimite, what do you think about his son becoming a priest? Not allowed, right? Only the Levites and certain of the Levites could become a priest. So I think you really see this story wrapped up in verse 6 that every man did what was right in his own eyes. And really what I'll try to be making this point this week and next is this is what happens, right? When there's no standard, when there's no truth, when there's no reason to say, well, what does the Lord want? When we go by what man thinks is right, this is the result. So just a really powerful point that I try want to stress this week and next is the necessity and the importance of always making sure of what we do is from the Lord and not what is right in our own eyes. Any thoughts? Yeah, Michael? Yeah, good. Drew, did you have a comment?
I don't know. I was just giving a lot of head nods.
Good. As you should. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, good point. And it may remind you of the Israelites, what they did at Mount Sinai, right? Poof, out came this calf out of the fire, and This was the God that led us out of Egypt. So again, they're worshiping God, but not the way he set aside to do that. So this is kind of the beginning of the story. And I've been trying to figure out in my own pea brain, what is the big message of this story that's contained in these two chapters. Maybe we see the idea of God kind of judging Micah. He gets what he deserves for doing this, kind of the first six verses, and we're going to see how that story plays out. So I want you to be thinking of that and try to answer that for me. Is we're really focusing on the story of Micah. We're going to turn our direction to the Levite, starting in verse 7, but then it ends with Micah. Micah is the beginning and the end of this. So be thinking of that as we go through this study tonight. We're introduced to a Levite, and where do you see him? Bethlehem. Now, is it okay that a Levite is kind of spread out in the land? That's okay. Why is that okay? Okay, good. So remember, they were given, you remember how many cities total? 48 cities total. The problem that I see here is Bethlehem is not one of those 48 cities. So you're just kind of scratching your head a little bit, thinking, what in the world are you doing in Bethlehem? That was not one of the cities that God set up for a Levite to be in. So the Levite is kind of wandering and ends up in Micah's house. Micah questions this young Levite in verse 9. He's curious, where did you come from? And, well, I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I am going to stay wherever I may find a place. Well, this sounds great to Micah. This is, man, I could have my very own Levite. Son, sorry, your chore of being a priest is over. We got an official Levite. So now God's really going to be happy with us. So what kind of offer do you see Micah and this Levite agreeing to in verse 10?
My personal priest.
Yeah. And he makes it a decent offer, you might say, that even though he is a young man, we see that in verse 7. He says, dwell with me and be a father and priest to me. In other words, I want you to just, you have the right to tell me what to do. You can kind of be a father figure, even though you're probably a lot younger than I am, more like a son, but you can be a father, a priest to me, and I'll give you 10 pieces of silver a year. I don't know, does that seem, what do you think of that? I have my own thoughts, but yours are usually better than mine. What do you think?
And he came with ready-made dots. He didn't have to bring his own
dots. Okay.
He was going to use the whole the family.
Yeah, it tells you a lot about that Levite that's willing to do this.
It just seems really strange because you have no other indication that Levites are supposed to be in like a private environment.
Right.
Like they're in the public sector. They're supposed to work for everybody.
Yes.
And the idea that you're going to just, it's kind of like hiring your own, politician or something. Like you're paying this guy off to basically then be able to filter whatever he says is right is going to flow through you. Like it's just, it shows the level of corruption.
Yeah, exactly. In my mind, this seemed like a low offer to me. He just stole 1,100 pieces of silver. I'll give you 10 a year. That's like less than 1%, right? Anyways, that's where my brain goes. So it's better I ask you, right? So it's great. I get free room and board and sets of clothes. So this will be great. Micah now gets his his own personal priest. And how does Micah feel about this in verse 13? Yeah, now the Lord is going to bless me because I know I probably shouldn't have let my son be the priest. He wasn't really a Levite. Now I got a Levite, and now the Lord is really going to bless me. Again, gives us some insight into Micah. Just a few application points, then we'll spend the rest of our time looking at the rest of this story that doesn't get any better, by the way, in chapter 18. But this point was brought up by Miss Julie. And the idea of we need to deal with sin. And that's something that the mother did not do. It seems to me the mother did everything she could to pacify her son for stealing 1,100 pieces of silver. She immediately turned the curse into a blessing. So seemingly her worst fear would be seeing her son cursed. And then she tells her son to do something that God says, cursed be the person who does this. So it tells you she's not familiar or doesn't trust in what God said. Micah deserved to be punished, right, for this, for what he did. But it's, as a parent, it's not fun to see your children be punished, right? We want to bless, we want to make them happy, but is that the best thing for them? To never discipline. Proverbs 13:24, he who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. See a major flaw, I think, in Micah's mom and how she treats her son. Any thoughts on that?
Which is kind of a microcosm of the entire nation at this point, right? Everybody's kind of not parenting the way they should parent because the whole nation doesn't know that.
Good point. And again, you see that everyone's going to do what's right in their own eyes, not looking to the Lord. Another point is don't serve God for personal gratification. Seems to me this young Levite, and by the way, we learn his name is Jonathan, so I'll just kind of say it's Jonathan from here on out. We learn that in the next chapter. Seems like he's just desiring more money, a raise in serving God. And once he got this offer, it's, well, this is fantastic. This is a great place for me to worship, and then I'll be provided for and all these things. And that seems to be his motivation for wanting to serve the Lord, what he gets out of it. And God is not a vending machine. I get this from the last verse, where it seems to me that Micah is just using God. Now that I have everything in place, now that I have a real Levite as a priest, now God is going to bless me and make me prosperous. It's very self-focused, right? That's what he wants. And again, I would argue that Micah is very materialistic already in this chapter. He wanted, willing to steal from his own mother 1,100 pieces of silver. And he likes this offer that Micah makes him. Micah said, okay, great. Now that I did this, God's going to bless me even more. So very materialistic mindset that we need to be aware of. And that shouldn't be why we serve the Lord and why we want to serve the Lord, so that what we can get out of him. Thoughts or comments on that idea or anything else that maybe I just kind of ran right past in chapter 17 that you'd like to comment on? Yes, sir.
You know, I contrast Timothy's mother and grandmother taught him, and how the law written in your heart is so important, because until the gospel becomes yours and you look to your responsibility toward God, you may not sing. You might be a perfectly good guy, you know, but you don't have a basis to make good sound judgment on where Timothy was taught without a priest. Evidently, his mother and grandmother did most of it. And he was ready when the gospel came along to say, okay, Jesus is the promise, but I'm going to follow these guys. And this guy's just ready to follow anybody.
Sure.
The priest.
Yeah, good. Certainly a contrast between Lois and Eunice compared to this mother. Yes, sir.
I think you have to also ask the question, why this story is told in the big picture? Because as you read the Judges, you realize that the people are getting more corrupt. But then you look at this tribe that was supposed to be the inheritance of God, and how far corrupt they are to the point that they don't realize who the inheritance is, what their purpose is as the Levites, as the priests, as the people who are the reserved God. And the level of corruption is just so bad that they become self-centered.
Great point, and I meant to mention that. That's excellent. Out of all the tribes, who would you expect to be kind of the most for the Lord and helping people learn about the Lord? It would be the Levites, right? That's kind of what they were supposed to do, is teach the Israel the law. And here's two stories about two terrible Levites, just kind of indicating again just how bad it's gotten. So let's look at the rest of our time together at chapter 18, where we are introduced again to the tribe of Dan. And you see that phrase, in those days there was no king in Israel. This appears four times in these chapters 17 to 21. You already saw it in chapter 17, verse 6. So this would put us in the time of the judges, implying that there will be a time that there is a king, but there's no king. There's no one kind of governing anything. Everyone's doing what's right in their own eyes. And what do you see Dan doing, the tribe of Dan, in verse 1? Looking for a home, looking for an inheritance. What do you remember about the tribe of Dan going all the way back to chapter 1? Verses 34 and 36. You remember how Dan did? Yeah, they were the worst. They were the worst ones. Judah was kind of the top. They were mainly successful in driving out the Canaanites. The Canaanites drove out Dan. It's kind of how that ended. And so Dan is still kind of looking for an inheritance, and you're going to kind of see what they ended up with. Instead of a territory, they were able to get a city, and they named it after themselves. So this is kind of that story on how the city of Dan and where the Danites ended up living. So in verse 2, they send five men out to spy the land. And again, kind of very similar to Joshua 2, verse 2, where God is kind of sending out spies. Joshua is sending out spies in the land to kind of figure out where we need to conquer. It's as though they haven't done anything. They don't have a place to live. So they're starting from scratch and attaining the land. And the five Danites run into Jonathan, Micah's priest. They kind of recognize the voice of Jonathan and ask him some questions. And basically, what do you have here? what are you able to have here? He said, well, thus and so has Micah done to me in verse 4, and he has hired me, and I have become his priest. That's what I'm doing here. I'm doing pretty good. And they said, well, since you are such a great priest, verse 5, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous. And they want, well, since you're a priest, you must be good with the Lord. And so tell us, are we going to be prosperous in this? And what's Jonathan's immediate answer? yeah, so it sounds good to me. Go in peace, and you'll do fine. I doubt very seriously that he took the time to even inquire of God, even that God would listen to him, I don't know. But he's kind of right off the top of his head, just, yeah, just go in peace, you'll do fine, and that you have the Lord's approval. So it kind of reminds you of Ahab's prophets, right? Just a bunch of yes men. Oh, yeah, you'll do great. Do whatever's in your heart. So, verse 7, the five Danites spy out the city of Laish. And this would be the very north part of Canaan. And why do you see that Laish would be a good city that maybe even the Danites could conquer? What does Laish not have going for them, in other words?
Doesn't have a protector.
A protector, yeah. They're a peace-loving people. They lived in a secure place. They had no dealings with anybody. And they were so far away from the Sidonians that if they were attacked, the Sidonians wouldn't have time to help them, and probably so far away, I just forget about them. But so they see that's all kind of good things. Now in Joshua 19, verses 40 to 48, Joshua 19, 40 to 48, kind of gives some of the cities that Dan was supposed to conquer, and Laish was one of those cities. So instead of capturing all of them, they just kind of pick the weakest one, and we'll try to do that one. So in verses 11 to 20, the Danites journey towards Laish, and 600 Danites from Zorah and Eshtaol set out to capture the city of Laish. They come to the city of Kirjath-Jearim and name the city Camp of Dan. Maybe kind of giving them some momentum. We're feeling good about it. We'll name this city after us. And they arrive to Micah's house in verse 13. So the five spies stayed there on their journey. They came back for a reason. They arrive at Micah's house in order to do what? In verse 13. Or maybe looking at verse 14. I'm giving you the wrong verse. What do they want to do with Micah? What's their goal? Yeah. So they questioned Micah or Jonathan, the priest. Excuse me, I'll get my names right. What do you have? Well, I have this and this. And so, well, that'd be great. So it seems to me they have the same mindset that Micah had. If we have a real Levite priest, then God's going to bless us. Verse 14, notice what they said. Do you know that there are in these houses an ephod, a household, idols, and graven image, and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you should do. They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare. The 600 armed with their weapons of war, who were the sons of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. Now the five men who went up to spy out the land went up and entered there and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate and the 600 men armed with weapons of war. When these went into Micah's house and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idol and the molten image, the priest said, what are you doing? They said to him, be silent. Put your hand over your mouth and come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man, or to be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel? Well, the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the household idols and graven image and went among the people. So they come, and they're very interested in the idols that were made. So we'll take those, and we'll also take you. And how do they? How are they able to get Jonathan to go with them? How would you summarize that?
Mega church.
Yes. The New Living Translation, mega church. That's right. So essentially, you have them making a better offer, right? Would you rather be a priest to this one man, his family, or to be to this whole tribe? Now, what do we know about Jonathan?
He's been bought once.
Yeah. He's been bought once. He's not afraid to be bought with more money. This is great. You know, this is fantastic with him. What's that?
Not at all loyal.
No, yeah, exactly. Loyalty doesn't get him much money. So, again, you see materialism take hold. Look at verses 15, 16, and 17 again. The 600 men of war stayed by the entrance of the gate while the five spies go and take Micah's religious items for themselves. Does not seem to cross their mind that these household idols, who are unable to protect themselves from getting stolen, will not be much help to them in Laish. Let's go steal these gods. Do you remember the story of Gideon? And how he at night, God told him to take down the Baal and the altar of Baal and the Asherah that your father has. And he does that at night where no one sees them. And then it's found out the next day and everyone's like, who did this? And they do some investigation and they end up saying, well, it was Gideon. Your son did this. And you remember Gideon's father's reply? Absolutely. It doesn't say much to the gods. His father's reply is, if Gideon has done this to Baal, then let Baal defend himself. Remember that? So here we have a whole tribe of Israel say, we're just going to take these gods who are not able to defend themselves, obviously, and they're going to protect us. So pretty sad synopsis, right, of this tribe. So the Danites make a good offer to Jonathan, and of course he accepts, and this is fantastic for him. So Micah is not happy about what's going on here. His gods are being taken away, and not only his god, his own personal Levitical priest is being taken away. So they depart, and again, I think about, of all the stories, of all the things that happened in the time of the judges, why does God choose this one to tell us about? So maybe this tells us what happens when you do not worship God. What happens when you put other gods before Yahweh? Just let you kind of think about that. So here we have Micah saying, wait a second. So they overtake the Danites in verse 22. Then read with me starting in verse 23. Then the man, the owner of the house, went out to them and said to them, no, my fellows, please do not act so wickedly. Since this man has come into my house, do not commit. I'm reading the wrong chapter. I'm in chapter 19. I'll get 18. They cried to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, what is the matter with you that you have assembled together? He said, you have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and have gone away. And what do I have besides? So how can you say to me, what is the matter with you? The sons of Dan said to him, do not let your voice be heard among us, or else fierce men will fall upon you, and you will lose your life with the lives of your household. So the sons of Dan went on their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. What does Micah end up with at the end of this story? Absolutely nothing. What did he want at the beginning of this story? He wanted his mom's money, and he was willing to steal it, and everything was fine until his mom issued a curse to the one who stole it. Well, I'll give it back. Okay, well, I'll make these gods for myself, and I'll have my own Levite. And what he's left with is all of these things that you put your trust in, all these things that you thought was going to make God bless you. What happened in the end? All those things were taken away. Maybe the idea is whatever if we worship things that are empty, like materialism, things of that nature, we're going to be empty. We're going to be just like Micah. And those things can be taken away from us in an instant, and we can't do anything about it. So it maybe shows to me, and you can think about this, it shows to me this story, make sure you worship God and don't think up of your own way to worship Him and put your trust in things that are not good. Okay, so they go their separate ways, and 27 through 31, the Danites are able to destroy Laish. They take Micah's gods and Micah's priest with them to Laish, and they overpower a people unable to protect themselves who have no outside help. Reminds me of a bully, right? Typical bully behavior where you attack the weakest, someone who is a lot weaker than you, and just destroy them. That's what the Danites do. The Danites rebuild and rename and live in Laish. So these peace-loving people who had no ties to anyone end up being an easy target, and the Danites rename this city Dan after, of course, Jacob's fifth son. So the Danites set up Micah's image, and Jonathan and his son serve as the priest to the Danites for many, many years. Go ahead.
I think it's really interesting when you realize that Jonathan is Moses' grandson. It says that he's the son of, if I'm reading this,
yeah,
right, he's the son of Gershom. Well, Gershom was Moses' son.
Yeah.
Moses' son.
Yeah.
So that's not that far removed from Moses.
Sure. And it could be that it's not necessarily his son's son, but, you know, but yeah, seemed like directly related to Moses. And there may be, I don't know, in your versions, some versions say Moses there instead of
the whole Bible.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a textual, but yeah, exactly. This is how far from Moses to Jonathan. And again, maybe emphasizing that point, how far they've gone from the Lord. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Okay.
Yet they dare think that God is going to bless them.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
And this territory that God would have given them, would have helped them, which was far more spacious than they had.
Trust in the Lord. Absolutely. Remember where Jeroboam set up his golden calves? Dan and Bethel. Doesn't Dan seem like the city that would accept a golden calf in their city? Seems to me that's a perfect place to set up a god. They already had gods there from the very beginning of that. I think I mentioned this before. Revelation chapter 7, and in verses 4 through 8, it kind of lists the 144,000 who are faithful. It lists 12 tribes, and it mentions Ephraim and Manasseh, and it leaves out Dan. I think this story kind of tells us maybe why Dan is left out. Because you just really don't see anything good about Dan, especially in the Judges. Yes, sir.
And that, like,
stems all the way back from Jacob's blessings to his sons. In Genesis 49, the blessing to Dan is that Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a viper in the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backwards. So you see that, like, from a long time ago,
yeah,
there was this idea that Dan was going to cause problems for other people, and then he plunders, like, a fellow tribe. And the idea that, like, that Jonathan says the journey on which you go on is under the eye of the Lord, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's blessing them, but, like, he's just kind of, like, watching to see what happens.
Right.
And then he's watching to see what happens is that this is fulfilled from Genesis 49, that, like, Dan follows that path.
Good point. Yeah, excellent. Certainly you see God's in control of all this. Excellent. All right, well, 2 points of application before that second bell rings on me. We need to avoid being Jonathan in many ways. It seems that Jonathan is interested in the best offer. If there comes up with a better offer, more money, more recognition, then that's what I'm going to go to. We need to be very aware of that. And why do we serve the Lord? Well, it's not amount of money that we may get. And I think especially poignant to preachers, of which I am one, right? So say one group offered, well, we'll offer you a lot more money than, say, this group. Should that have a weight? Well, really, my goal should be, I want to serve the Lord, and he'll provide. But we just don't see that kind of attitude from Jonathan. I don't know if I'm saying that very well. Would you imagine the Apostle Paul being swayed by money, or Jesus being swayed by, I'll offer you this? Oh, well, okay, I'll go with you then if you're offering that. See that in Jonathan. And certainly our hearts need to be right to determine God's will for us. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. We should certainly determine the will of God for our lives by reading what he wants instead of, well, I think this is a good idea and this is what we should do. Okay, well, so we're going to hit those points again, especially that last one, next week. And we got 3 chapters to cover. So if you would, as you always do, please read ahead, and we'll finish up, Lord willing, the book of Judges next week, and we'll tackle the good book of Ruth in 2 weeks, and that'll wrap up our study. Thank you.